Okay, here we go. We usually start with music in the back half here. Should we kick it off there?
It's fine by me.
Yeah.
I think in this, for what we have left for movies and music, there's really not a lot of movies, so hopefully we don't take too long with that. And I told you guys earlier, the quality of music is absurd, but there's not as many albums this time around, thankfully.
I did have one, I think, worthwhile, like, contextual thing to mention when it comes to music. After September 11th, Clear Channel, who owns a ton of radio stations throughout the U.S.,
yeah.
They had a list of songs that they ended up deeming inappropriate for playing on the radio.
I heard that. I saw some of the songs on that list. I just don't remember what they were.
One of them.
I think 99 Red Balloons.
One of them was Chop Suey from System of the Down, Toxicity, which released.
That is, in fact,
month.
A September 2001 album. Yeah.
Yep. Why that one?
I don't know. I don't remember that song.
I there's not much I can remember from that. But I can't remember what the deal was with
it. It's the one where, I think, maybe it has something to do with the fact that he has that self-righteous suicide comment in it. He says, like, I cry when angels deserve to die.
That could
all be misconstrued or deemed as, like, I don't know. These guys are Armenian. Like, it's not like they're Muslim or would even remote. Not that just being Muslim means you're pro.
But
the attacks, but like, yeah, it's a weird
good recovery,
song to,
good recovery, right?
But if, yeah. if you guys,
I don't know what to say about it, but
if you guys are curious about what Clear Channel thought was inappropriate to play on the radio after 9/11, Highway to Hell, TNT, both by AC/DC, there's Smooth Criminal, the Alien Ant Farm cover of that song.
What?
What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong.
Probably because of Dr. Strangelove. That song plays as all the atomic bombs are going off.
In the Air Tonight.
Phil Collins. Yeah.
Phil Collins got banned from the radio.
Holy Diver.
Like Dio?
Yeah. Bad Religion.
Doesn't Dio
by Godsmack.
Isn't there a South Park episode where Dio is the house band for the school dance?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So,
Holy
yeah.
Diver? I love that song.
Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit.
This would be the weirdest playlist just to put all these songs together.
Ironic by Alanis Morissette.
Because she has that line about the plane crashing.
Another One Bites the Dust and Killer Queen.
Yeah, yeah.
These songs are Jumper, Third Eye Blind.
Ouch, that's a tough one. Yeah, that happened.
But yeah, so songs that Clear Channel felt like, no, we can't play these. I'm not sure when they decide that it was okay again. If you want to carry us through, Ryan, I'm going to let you see if we find some information.
Some of those just simply shouldn't be on the radio anyways.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how
not
you want
their message.
Did you guys listen to any of the albums?
I did.
Okay, anything you want to start with, or should I just go through them and we'll talk about them?
I don't listen
about
to music.
Let's go through them.
Okay. So the number one album of the month, which I find insane, because some of the albums here are like best in genre slot for the year. But the number one album on the website was Microphones, The Glow, Part 1.
This is one that I did listen to.
Which means Part 2. This is Part 2. Mm. Yeah. So this is a band that we talked about a year ago because they had just released an album called, I think, It Was Hot, So We Stayed in the Water or something like that. It is very well loved. I don't even think it sold a million copies, which is kind of insane. There's like four albums on this list that sold at least 8 million, but hey, you know. Commercial success isn't everything. It's regarded as like a lo-fi masterpiece. It's kind of lo-fi rock. Much like the previous album from a year ago, same deal. It is got these very soothing, ambient, atmospheric parts that kind of then burst through with these really loud productions of, again, lo-fi music, so it's got that kind of rough cassette sound.
Yeah, you kind of like hear like the scratching. Mm-hmm. And there's also a lot of the songs where you can hear the rattle of a guitar string, almost like they had the guitars dropped down in tune, so you can kind of instead of just hearing like the notes when the strings are plucked, you can kind of hear the strings rattling against the fretboard. There's also a lot of like just droning undertones, whether it's, you know, I forget what some of the instruments were they were using, but a lot of like also just kind of low droning drums. In the background of a lot of the music. Really, really interesting album.
Mm-hmm. As with a lot of albums from this month and just a lot of albums from this era, gratuitous runtime, it's 66 minutes long. I don't think it needed to be 66 minutes.
And a lot of the songs are like 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
There's a bunch. There's like 22 tracks. And there's a... The songs, it seems like they're either under 2 minutes or over five.
Yeah. And especially once you get toward the very end of it, a lot of those last tracks, they're all like 2 or 3 minutes long. Mm. I kind of get the vibe that it's like, we recorded it and we got the room, we might as well put it on the record regardless of its quality. Not the first time I'm going to say that for the music this month, but that said, there's still a lot of really, really interesting stuff on here. I enjoy it. And again, it's the sort of album that you don't necessarily need to actively listen to. It is actually good for background music and kind of when it comes and goes. It does that really good job of those quiet, droney moments kind of just get you into the groove, and then it comes forward with something interesting. And when it does come back, it's not like, it's not a boring stuff. It's not a bad thing. It's very nice. And this guy actually has a really good sense of melody. He's constantly giving you these little earworm hooks in his music. So all in all, I think it's very good. I think it is way overshadowed by 10 other records on this list. But I think I can totally see why people did enjoy this record.
Kind of seems like the indie hipster pick.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of those albums where I don't know if it's necessarily as relevant today as it was back then. I think that lo-fi music definitely has made a comeback. I feel like there's a lot more interest in lo-fi music today in 2022. And this is probably a very influential album to a lot of those artists.
Sure.
Now, talking about someone who's real fucking old, Bob Dylan released Love and Theft.
Oof.
So keep in mind, you know, Bob Dylan, I believe his self-titled album came out in 1961. So we're talking about stuff 20 years ago, double that in 2001, and that's how far back you can go to find out when this guy was a revolutionary.
Yep.
Iconic musician of folk, probably makes the top five of those most important artists ever. Love and Theft, though, I personally didn't like this record at all.
I did not like it either. Yeah. I got through two, maybe three tracks before I had to turn it off. I just found it insufferable.
Yeah, and so I like what I know of Bob Dylan. It's mostly propaganda songs and not propaganda songs.
Protest.
Yeah, protest songs, like politically motivated songs.
Yeah, they're like a lot of like his most famous stuff, like stuff like devoid of context, still seem like really politically charged, but can like fit into just about any framing you want to give them.
Yeah. And with this album, it's actually like a honky-tonk record. It's kind of strange. It very much feels like bar pub music. It got great reviews at the time. And by the way, his voice. This is one of those people that, like, I don't know whoever convinced him he should be singing.
Right. Like, when he was younger, there was, like, a certain, like, charm to it. Like, the sort of, I don't know, like, twang he's, or however you want to describe his voice. But, yeah, like,
kind of like Hank Williams has that voice, or it's rough and, you know, you kind of like it for its sound.
In 2001, he's a much aged man and has probably done a lot of like smoking and drinking in his life, and you can tell like, he sounds like he's super congested.
Yeah.
Maybe it was when we recorded it.
Maybe.
Possibly.
In which case, be a professional, do it again.
Yeah. So what to say about it? It got great reviews. People at the time loved it. I don't know if it's straight up Bob Dylan worship. But that wasn't really anything for me special. I wouldn't go back and listen to it. I think if you were going to go listen to his stuff, listen to that classic shit from the 60s that he was writing that was so influential for its time.
Yeah, put it to like any music streaming device and go to YouTube or Spotify or whatever. Just like do Bob Dylan greatest hits and you will get all these tracks of really great songs.
Yeah, I think
you could probably none of these.
Yeah, you could probably skip this one unless you are a Bob Dylan super fan, in which case you probably hate us right now for trashing what you consider a fantastic record. Moving on, though, this would, believe it or not, be when Nickelback came out with their, I believe, debut record, Silver Side Up.
Oh, wow.
Canadian butt rock outfit. They would sell 10 million copies of this.
God.
And I'll tell you, you know, it's not without its charm. Like, Nickelback simultaneously doesn't deserve to be that punching bag that they are in the music industry, and simultaneously they don't give a shit. Like they know that people say this about them and they don't care. Like they are, if nothing else, very calculated and about what kind of music they're trying to make and who their audience is. Their audience loves them. You know, they've got fans, they sell out venues, they're doing good doing what they're doing. They sold 10 million copies of this record. I mean, granted, it's the soundtrack to, you know, it's songs talking about alcoholism and strip clubs and really like low rent blue collar lifestyle.
I don't think they were the punchy bag when they came out with this album, though.
No, because it had tracks like "You Remind Me" and "Never Again" and "Too Bad." They had tons of hit singles on this record.
Yeah,
you probably couldn't escape them on your generic rock radio station run by Clear Channel.
In Orlando, it's WJRR 101.1.
Yep. And I read interviews. Is it Chad Kroeger? Of course, that would be his name, Chad Kroeger.
That's such a Canadian name. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you can just hear the denim. His interviews are great, because, yeah, he's not like, oh, shucks, people don't like us. He intentionally writes this kind of music because it's marketing it towards his fan base.
Mm.
Like, he knows what he's doing, and it's macho butt rock. It's what it is. You don't classify it as anything else. It's better than that Puddle of Mud album, Come Clean, from last month, which is essentially the same thing. It's this post grunge rock kind of stuff. So, you know what? Good for Nickelback. So many people have taken shots at this guy. It's so cliched to say that Nickelback.
I take shots because it's fun, but yeah.
I don't care. I also don't like Nickelback's music. I don't find it particularly fun or interesting or good. But you know, like a younger version of me, like when you say like things like, oh well, you know, they know their fan base and they're doing this, like, oh, they're obviously just doing it for the money. A younger version of me, like, how dare they try to make a facade of art for money. The 37-year-old version would be like, people do so many worse things for money. Like, there are people doing terrible things in the world for money. If Nickelback is, if they're only making their songs for the money, all right, they could be doing worse things.
It's a job.
Fine.
I mean, I'd rather make songs that I hate for money than work at Target.
We're starting a band.
We're starting a band, you mean.
And for what it's worth,
it's going to be a quarter forward.
These are catchy songs. Yep. Like, there are a lot of bands trying to do this, and they go nowhere, and they suck.
Hmm.
Nickelback, they sell out stadium tours and shit. Hmm. So they made good songs. These are actually good songs, regardless of whether or not you want to hear about the life of a construction worker who spends his time at strip clubs and drinks too much. Like, that's their market. That's their demo. That's who they're hitting up. And you can't wonder for that.
One of their songs start with, I like your pants down at your feet. I'm like, all right. Like,
yeah, there you go. That's a thing. That's what they do. Moving on, Tenacious D released their self-titled.
I love this album.
Yeah, me too. I think this is the perfect melding of like actual rock music and comedy.
Favorite song, Wes?
Probably the greatest song in the world.
Yeah.
I really like that one.
Oh, the tribute?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's what it's called. It's called The Tribute, yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that one, and
Wonder Boy's on this record.
Wonder Boy's really good. That was a
really good song for them.
There was the last one, it's very long, where they take over.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I forget what that one was called.
City Hall.
City Hall. Oh, man, City Hall was really good, too.
Mm-hmm. What you got? Explosivo, that was a really fun one. A lot of the comedy tracks on here also hold up really well. It's a fun record, like... I'm not really sure what to say about it. Dave Grohl's the drummer on it, fun fact.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I believe. I forget the names of the other guys in it, but the two, Kyle Gass and...
Jack Black.
Jack Black, thank you. They play acoustic guitar. Both of them are playing acoustic guitar on the record. And they actually have electric guitar, bass, drums, and they're all provided by actual musicians. They're musicians, too. Provided by, like, musicians that are more famous for other bands that are sort of chipping in on this project that they're doing. And this is kind of right when Jack Black is really starting to take off. I won't spoil the movie. He's going to be starring in a movie that comes out in the next month or two. And, you know, he's been in it. He was a really loved character in High Fidelity.
Yep. Which we talked about several months ago at this point.
Yeah, and he's already been in a whole slew of other movies and done things, so...
Wes, what do you think the movie is next month? Or within the next few months? Jack Black.
I don't know, School of Rock?
That's what I would guess, too.
But, yeah. I don't know.
It is not School of... Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
Can I spoil the future?
Yeah. It spoils the future.
It's a movie that didn't get reviewed very well. Shallow Hal.
Oh, okay.
For good reason.
I want to say it's a Farrelly movie.
Yeah.
So...
I think I've only seen that once, but it doesn't feel like Jack Black doing Jack Black things. It feels like Jack Black trying to do the traditional romantic comedy kind of stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean, but hey, he is the face of a poster... for movies now. He is that guy. He is a star, quote unquote.
every Thursday night when I was in college, so to speak.
Yeah.
I was hanging out with college friends, but I dropped out of college.
You were of college age.
I was of college age.
Yeah.
I went to a Thursday night bowling, and every week they played Fuck Her Gently, and my entire group was just singing along with that in the middle of the bowling alley.
Good.
That's nice. So,
yeah. It was a weird memory of mine.
Yeah. So, all in all, great record.
And then the nursing home switched bowling nights.
That's great. Moving on. So, Ryan Adams released an album called Gold. You know who Ryan Adams
is? No, I don't know this one.
He's very much like Heartland rocker in the vein of something like a John Mellencamp or maybe like a Tom Petty. He very pretentiously said that with this album, he was hoping to invent a modern classic. So he needed 70 minutes to do it, apparently.
Well, at least he's aiming high.
Yeah, it's a long run.
Did he get there? Don't keep me in suspense.
I think it's great. I think he should have stopped at the 40-minute mark, though. I think that the last...
And 30... made two modern classics. I see what you're going for.
No, just don't release the next 30 minutes. No, the first 40 minutes, when I remember, I was listening through this, and I was like, God, these are good songs. Really, really good song. Track after track, I was really just enjoying them. They were doing different things, all of them were unique and interesting. I liked them. And then there just kind of gets to this point where it's all very samey, and it's like, all right, I get it. You don't need to be doing this. He had 40 minutes of what would have been a modern classic. I would be totally up for calling it that. But the rest of it is just generic roots rock stuff. Like, he needed an extra 30 minutes of music for when he was touring or something. I don't know. Not that he needed it. This is his second album. At least from North Carolina, for what it's worth. He today kind of has a bit of I don't know what you would call it. A demerit against his name or whatever. So he was married to Mandy Moore. Actress Mandy Moore for a while. They got divorced. He is currently part of the Me Too movement for doing some really cringy and creepy casting couch kind of shit.
Oh no.
Like finding hot women in the music industry and being like, I'll make you famous if you know you spend time with me, if you hook up with me, and then would just like ditch him.
That's not cool.
Yeah, so he's definitely a douchebag, at least in the modern
I think day. we can say officially we're against that.
Yeah,
don't be a creep.
So,
less.
You know. Just one time. I'm kidding, King, that never happened, just so you are listening. God.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things where if you... everybody's done bad things, I don't know. Like, nobody on here is a saint. No one's here as an angel. But, yeah, Ryan Adams, you sure did some douchey things in the past 6 years of your existence. So, maybe that's why you're not married to Mandy Moore, who... Seems, you know what? She seems like an all right lady. So that's,
she seems okay.
That's your problem, dude. But yeah, Gold, it's fine. Just stop after nine tracks. After the ninth track, it's just bullshit. Ben Folds released Rockin' the Suburbs. I actually really love this record. Really, really, really good. He makes very quirky pop music. He is a virtuoso piano player. So even if the songs feel like they might kind of fall flat, his piano playing is fucking spectacular. And it's just great to listen to. It also, luckily, has some really catchy songs. Like, crazy fucking catchy songs on here. Like, Fired and Not the Same. Apparently, in England, there's a big... kind of like, you know how we have, like, The Voice and the singing shows?
Yeah, singing talent shows.
They have one that's solely centered around a cappella.
Hmm.
And Ben Folds actually got the closer of one of their seasons, where this song, Not the Same, was used as the showcase for everyone to sing. And it's, like, chills phenomenal. It's so, so good. This is a great record. If you, again, very quirky, very nerdy. Like, if bands like, maybe, like, They Might Be Giants. I don't know if you guys listen to them.
But yeah.
If you like that kind of stuff, you'll probably really like Ben Folds.
Okay.
Very, very good. Last album from the pop rock category is a band called Beulah. I'm going to spell it. You guys tell me how I say this. Beulah. Beulah?
Maybe.
But anyway, they released an album called The Coast Is Never Clear. This is a power pop album, and power pop very deliberately tries to be as catchy as it possibly can. It delivers. It's really, really good. And it's also a 40-minute record, so it's not wasting your time. Like, they press this for a single album, single LP album. Great idea, guys. Again, super-duper catchy. Very much like that new Pornographers record we talked about a few months ago called Mass Romantic. If you like that kind of sound, if you're into, I don't know, like, Weezer-y type stuff, you know, you probably really like this record. Again, it's, some people would say that it's crass to try so hard to just make something catchy, but these guys sure do it. You know, like it's okay to try to make an album with some hooks. Maybe Bob Dylan work on that. And now, like, I don't know how deep we need to go into this, but we're into the hip-hop category. Jay-Z releases an album called The Blueprint. Mm. Releases it directly on 9/11. And if there is a musician you associate with New York City, it's probably Jay-Z. Like, so he recorded this album in 2 weeks. It is, after in his real-life drama with this guy's real life, he's got two charges pending against him. One for assault weapons, and the other is he stabbed somebody at Q-Tip's record premiere party like the year before. So he's got two trials coming up in his life. He is also, by the way, because this is so Machiavellian, all of these other MCs are taking shots at him because it's been like 3 years since he's made a record and he's the king of New York. So of course everyone's trying to kill the king. And he's just like fucking over it. And he kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like it's the scientist goes in the lab and just knocks everything over and just lays the blueprint down. And he's like, we're starting over. This is brand fucking new. I'm coming at everybody. Right? And he throws away like all of, because he's notorious. If you look at his other records, right? He's made like 5 or 6 records. Like Reasonable Doubt came out in 96. He's been at this for a while. He's got this whole slew of producers. Tosses them all. Like he's working with 2 producers. A guy named Just Blaze, who's going to be a huge deal. And a guy you may have heard of, Kanye West. He has Kanye West producing tracks on this album. And I think he's got, like, he's got one other song because it's a guest producer. And then it's just these two other guys kind of going at it. It is an unbelievable record. It is so fucking good. It's so refreshing. And you know how, like, when I talk about the other hip-hop songs, I'm like, here's this slew of guest stars on it. One guest star. It is 60 minutes of him airing grievances, taking shots, just like basically saying, I'm still here. I am in charge of New York. This is my town. Fuck everybody. And the only guy he lets in the room with a microphone.
Wes, who do you think it is? We're going to guess.
I million years, I won't be able to get it. Eminem. I don't fucking know.
Correct.
What?
Oh, shit.
Oh, fuck.
Because Eminem's the one guy you don't fuck with.
I was going to say Snoop.
Oh, amazing. Oh,
Snoop would be a good guess, too. Like, but yeah, like, because one, nobody fucks with Eminem. Because Eminem would, like he goes after his own mom. Like, he does not care. He is crazy. And he's the only other producer that's not those two. Like, he brings in his own producer for a track called Renegade. And Renegade's one of the best tracks on here. There's also tracks like You Don't Know, which is really good. Like, I wanted to bring up the track list and just kind of talk about how this fucking track, this album plays out. Because he even starts by, like, kind of just giving you really nice taste of what you're about to get with The Ruler's Back. Even has a nice little introduction for you, the listener, where he's just like, thank you for coming to this record, everybody. You're about to have a real good time. And then he just starts hyping him up for a bit. And then the next track is The Takeover. And The Takeover is when he just starts just laying waste to everybody in the hip-hop scene that's been trashed. Because he's been on other tracks. They've been dissing him. This track, Takeover, is one of the most, like, diss tracks are kind of a thing in hip-hop, right? This is one of the best diss tracks ever recorded. And specifically, he's going after Jadakiss, Kiss the Game, like, who just had Kiss the Game. He even goes after Beanie Siegel after 2 months ago being on Beanie Siegel's own album. Beanie Siegel takes a shot at him, and he just, like, just buries the dude. And then, biggest of all is Nas. And it ignites this beef. Because Nas is this guy from New York. He's other big rapper. I've never been a big Nas guy. Whatever. And then, like, Nas even makes a track back at him, which a lot of people are like, this is a great diss track. Then they said that. Now it's basically just, like, so low-effort homophobia. Like, basically just being like, you're gay. And, like, Jay-Z does not make a single, like, comment about anybody being gay on this entire 5-minute-long airing of grievances. Like, it is just such a good track. And then
that's such, like, an early 21st century thing to do. Like, somebody, like, insults you. Like, yeah, well, you're gay.
Yeah, so I can't believe people were like, people at the time were like, oh, Nas really got him. And now it's like, wait a minute. All he did was just call him gay the whole time. Like, that's nothing. Like, you know, well, Jay-Z is literally being like, I showed you how to use a gun. I'm the first one to show you how to use a gun. He's like, I showed you all this. Like, I tried to get you hooked up selling what I sell, getting you into this lifestyle. I got you all of the guys who design your clothes. I did everything for you, dude. And you're going to come at me? Like, it is so Machiavellian. It is just so silly. So silly and so fun that he is just so much ego condensed into one guy. It's crazy. And then Izzo, the Hovid, is the next track that comes out. And it's another one where, again, after all of that dirty business that he just had, he reminds you, again, the listener, that he's so happy to have you here. And we're about to have a great time. And this track lands. It's so great. It's a party track. And then Girls, Girls, Girls is up next. Like, You Don't Know is great. Like, hard to describe. Some of the hardest rhymes delivered through one of the, like, toughest beats that only he could really push through a track like this. I think a track like this, if you just listen to it, it's so jarring that not a lot of people could actually, like, literally rhyme through it, rap through it. He makes it work, totally owns it. And then, yeah, songs like Never Change, Heart of the City, and this is also going to be the classic Kanye West-style production, which is using old soul samples, pitch-shifting them, and then just kind of, like, looping them over and over again. It's unique. It's his own sound. And again, this is 2001 that he's doing this. This is very, very early stuff. And then lastly, Renegade, his track that he does with Eminem, where Eminem shines on this one too. Wow, wow, wow. This album is amazing. This album's fucking amazing. This is one of the best hip-hop albums ever made. And it, again, it is the blueprint. It is so just interesting. It's such a fun narrative for him to have done this. For him to say, like, I have no more friends. No more friends in this game. My producers, get the fuck out of here. I'm working with two guys, two unknowns, and I'm starting over. So, damn.
Album of the month? Yeah, album of the month. Everyone go listen to The Blueprint and play Advance Wars.
Yeah, you really should. You really should. Maybe this is. Probably is.
It's such a weird mindset. You say they're playing a war game while listening to The Blueprint.
Yeah, it kind of is. So
what another, a perfect time.
Another interesting tidbit about this record is the cover art is this shot of him at a desk with a microphone and some brass knuckles with just shoes that you can see kind of off the screen, sort of as though he's at his desk commanding his army of mobsters, right? It's taken from a photo series from the 30s called The Firm, which is shots of Irish gangsters. So, again, he just has this really nice understanding of the history of gangland violence in America and in England. And his understanding of gangland violence, it transcends, like, this whole, like, gangster-level hoodlum shit, like the Crips and Blood stuff. He's, like, so above that. You know, he is very much a mogul. And he talks about how, like, he makes more money in fashion than all these other guys make selling records. You know, it's just, he's a kingpin. So, very cool stuff. Another hip-hop album, and it's so nice that this is the one that's side-by-side with it, because you're like, who could live up to this? Aesop Rock releases Labor Days. I don't know if you guys remember, we talked about Aesop Rock about a year ago, because he released Float. This is, again, if it's not the most lyrically dense album ever, it's got to be the second after only Float. Like, again, Aesop Rock just... I saw a neat thing where they were like, how many unique words do rappers use? And it was the first 35,000 words of any given rapper. And it wasn't even like he was number one with a little bit of a thing. He was number one with like 9,800 words. The number two place guy was like 5,700 words. Like, he is so lyrically dense with the way that he raps. It's great. He, again, is back with a guy named Blockhead who makes real chill beats. And Aesop Rock credited him himself on half the beats. So he is now a producer. Like, he didn't produce his last album at all. So he's producing stuff here too, and it's all that really nice, chill, lo-fi beat shit. I love this record. It's a totally different change of pace than what you would get from that Jay-Z record. It's totally cool listening to it. And probably the most out of place, given the what America is going through at the time, Jamiroquai releases a Funk Odyssey. Have you guys even heard of Jamiroquai? Mm. He had a song called Virtual Insanity. He makes very breezy funk disco, I guess. He's very popular in England. He sold 2 million copies of this record, surprisingly. And it's a fun kind of party album. Really, really nice if you like that kind of 70s, 80s funk with big bubbly bass lines. Just really nice, clean, soft production. He's got a great voice. It's really cool. It's really nice. But again, totally, tonally out of place with what Americans were going through. Probably why he's not a big deal stateside, but he's well-loved overseas. Enough of hip-hop. Now we're into the other album that, like... So Jay-Z's Blueprint has its place in hip-hop. It's just, like, this pinnacle. A band called Converge releases Jane Doe. And that is that same album, but almost for, like, the hardcore scene. Jane Doe is a band... I was just counting the tracks. Six different tracks on this album have bands named after them. Like, bands would later name themselves after songs off of this fucking record. So Jane Doe by Converge is a band from Boston, Massachusetts. No, not from Boston, Massachusetts, but they are from Massachusetts. They are essentially a hardcore band making hardcore punk music. But they make this album Jane Doe, and I think that their idea was to do something different, to like kind of make it sound different. And you have a guy named Jacob Bannon, who is their singer. You have, I'm trying to think, Ben Kohler is their drummer. And who is the guitarist? I can't even think of the guitarist's name. He has his own production studio, and he produces their records. Kurt Ballou. And everyone sort of took this approach where they were going to do something different with the way that their sound works within the hardcore punk scene. So Jacob Bannon is using these kind of distortions over his voice. Kurt Ballou is really crunching up his guitar tone. It is very thick and distorted and just kind of just jarring to listen to. And Ben Kohler, conversely, is kind of bringing the drum forward. He's actually like recording the kit in this very raw, immediate way. And you throw it all together, and they're using very unconventional song structures, especially for this hardcore scene. And it just makes this album that is just bursts out so chaotically that you're just trying to sort of catch your footing with it as you listen to it. It's so extreme. And it's just not the usual tough guy bullshit you get in a lot of hardcore. It's this very like wounded emotional stuff, and Jacob Bannon's voice is just terrifying. He sounds like a freaking pterodactyl over there. Like he is one got this just brutal yell that he's doing that again has a layer of distortion on it that it just creates this thing that doesn't even sound human. And with the instrumentation behind it, where it's so hard to, aside from like the tap of hi-hats, you almost can't place anything as having an actual sound. It's just like, ugh. It's like, I don't even know what to compare it to. It is like a hurricane. It's probably what it's like when an alligator has you and is like rolling around underwater with you, or you just can't figure out what anything is. But the more you listen to it, the more it will take shape, and the more you'll kind of pick pieces out of it. It is a fantastic record. It is very challenging to listen for people that just want, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 hardcore punk tracks and circle pits and stuff like that. It might be a little bit adventurous for that kind of set, but like, nah, this is a huge, huge record. This is so fucking good, and I love Kurt Ballou, the guitarist. Again, punk bands don't really use guitars like this. He just kind of creates these monolithic, nasty, heavy, heavy guitar tones. So totally recommend it. I saw Converge earlier this year too. I actually saw them in concert. Great, great show. These guys, they still got it. Really, really great band. So totally should listen to those. I'll keep moving. Explosions in the Sky is a band from Texas who made the mistake of saying this plane will crash tomorrow in their liner notes, and it came out, of course, September 10th.
Uh-oh.
Yep. So, of course, they were put on FBI watch lists for doing this. What are they, though? They are a Texas-based instrumental post-rock group, guitar, bass, and drums. They make these very atmospheric records that have these large swells of distortion, very very cinematic. This is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful record. I feel like I'm already going long. I'm going to start piling through some of these if you don't mind.
Let's do it.
Envy is a band from Japan. They released All the Footprints. I like this band a lot. They are post-rock, too, in the way that Explosions in the Sky is, except they have a singer, and their songs are a little bit more short form. They're going to release bigger and better albums later on, but this is absolutely worth listening to. It's good. I think we've talked about a lot of other screamo records. I guess in a way it kind of fits into that screamo scene, but it's a lot more genteel and a lot more, again, there's kind of grandeur to it. Electronic music. Royksopp released Melody AM. It's like, for one, this is a really good record because it's a combination of house music and trip-hop. And trip-hop oftentimes is very grimy and dirty and gritty. This is a very light and breezy record. Like, I feel like trip-hop and I think of, like, the fucking Matrix. You know, that kind of vibe of, like, leather suits and everything's wet and gross.
Oh, that the hair's always slicked back.
Yeah, everyone has black hair.
It's not hair gel.
Yeah. No, and there's Rexop, this album Melody AM. It's using a lot of the conventions of trip-hop, but it's making such a brighter and listenable, enjoyable record. I really like them. It's a duo. They're from Norway. And, man, this album has, like, tons and tons of listens. I was surprised that on Spotify how popular this record is. It's got, like, 10 million listens per track.
Oh, yeah.
Just crazy. So, this album...
they probably made at least $20 off of that.
You would think. I mean, gosh, they probably get a couple of dinners out of that. Sufjan Stevens releases Enjoy Your Rabbit. So he will be a darling.
Go on.
Oh, there's a theme here. Don't worry. He's a darling of like the indie pop and folk scene. It's weird. I'm talking about my electronic albums here. He's also noted for having the voice of an angel. Guy's got a beautiful voice. He releases this album where, one, he's not making indie music, he's not making folk music, and he's not singing. It is, did I write down the time? I think it's 80 minutes long.
Oh my God.
80 minutes of electronic music he's making.
That's 90% of a Morbius.
Right, you know. And he's calling it Enjoy Your Rabbit because the rabbit is one of the signs of the zodiac.
Hmm.
Every track is supposed to be one of the animals of the zodiac. And you might be thinking like, oh, that's cool. I wonder what his snake song sounds like, or I wonder what his boar song sounds like, or all these different animals, like the dragon.
It all sounds the same.
It doesn't sound like fucking anything associated with what the animals sound like. Apparently what he did is that he was doing, like, he was recording sounds and stuff, and then if he found something that sounded like an animal, he would then contort it and then make a song out of it. And in no way, if you didn't know that, well, if you knew that and knew the process of him doing it, maybe it would make the songs a little more interesting. But you don't. You don't know what the fuck he's doing. And none of these sound at all like the animals are supposed to represent. And of course, that is a religious thing. And by the way, he is also extremely, not extremely Christian, but he is very devoutly Christian.
Extremely Christian.
He has, I believe, 8 Christmas albums. This guy is super prolific, by the way. He's made tons and tons of records. He's got like 8 Christmas albums, I kid you not. And those are mostly songs of like the traditional Christian, like, Come All Ye Angel, and, you know, Hark the Herald Angels
Sing. He believes, like, in intense forgiveness.
The Christian songs, well, you know, like...
It's... Yeah, but they're folklore. They're folk, well, folk style.
So, like, I mean, he's going to have... He's going to have, like, 3 years in the next 10 years where he's got the best indie album of the year. It ain't going to be this fucking record, though. This is a weird record, and I have no idea what compelled him to make this. His next album is going to be...
The Holy Spirit.
Yeah, you know... Oh, and that's the other thing. The last song is called The Year of Our Lord.
Okay.
Okay.
Just a reminder. Hey, just so you know.
What is the sound associated with Our Lord? I don't know.
Gregorian chants, of course.
You'll forgive me for telling you, I just laughed when I saw the song and did not make it 80 minutes through this list. I gave it a couple of tries from the start to be like, maybe it'll click or I'll enjoy some component of this. He's not even very good at making electronic music. It's just kind of there. I didn't enjoy it. And again, he will be huge. He is an amazing musician. This album is just totally like, what are you doing, dude? Like, could you please get on with, you know,
stick to what you're good at.
Like, he's gonna make this album Michigan, where there's 20, he records like all 27 instruments on it. This guy's a musical genius, you know, compelled by the faith of God as well, so like, that's great, but, you know, what are you doing? Why did you make an album about the Chinese zodiac and then make it clear that you're like, I don't even care about this shit, I'm a Christian?
And this is all clearly bullshit. And Jesus, you know, died for our sins.
And that gossamered voice I have. You know what? Let's not do that. Let's not sing. No more singing.
God, that's so weird.
It's the weirdest wasted
talent. What if he did that just for that?
Let's get him on the show and explain himself.
Yeah, he's got to break this down for us.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. The Other People Plays, we're getting out, released an album called Lifestyles of the Laptop Cafe. I like this record a lot. It's ambient techno mixed with a little bit of house music. The big thing about this record is, sadly, that the guy that produced it would pass away a year after this came out. So people kind of look back on it like, we lost a potentially big guy in this world of music. And yeah, I really did dig this. If you know what ambient techno is, it's got its moments of that mixed in with a lot of tech house. So very, very gentle record. Very beautiful record. And again, another album that, God, I wish we had 30 minutes to talk about, is Sleep Research Facility's Nostromo. This is a album of deep ambient drone. So
they intentionally name it after the ship in Alien?
It is a concept album about Alien.
Okay.
I kid you not. Yeah, the track listing is Deck A, B, C, D, and then is it not the Narcissus? What's the ship that they're going to? Yeah, is it the Narcissus?
No. I don't remember.
So yeah, it's one guy is this project. And I don't know if you remember, we talked about this guy, Robert Rich, that made an album called Somnium that was like 7 hours long.
Oh yeah.
Designed to basically lull you into REM sleep. That's what this album is. It is supposed to create these just warm, soothing layers of synth and just like the sounds of what it must have been like to be on the ship. There's no percussion, no beats. This is beatless music. Oh yeah, it is Narcissus is the ship that they're going to rescue, I believe.
Okay.
So yeah, and it's not like you ever hear like the aliens in your ear or anything. It's not supposed to scare you or like make you feel in danger.
The bursting sound when it pops out of your guts.
But. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and the screams of John Hurt.
Yeah.
He said that this is his favorite movie and that one of the things that he loved about it was the atmosphere and how the ship felt alive. Mm. You know, because there are a lot of those parts where it doesn't look like it's just this clean vehicle. There's like parts where, you know, boards and panels are missing and the innards of the ship are coming out.
Tubes and wires and stuff are poking out.
Yeah, it just kind of feels human in a way. It feels like the ship is alive and you're just kind of listening to the ambient life of this ship. So that's the soundscapes he's trying to evoke.
One of the first things you see in the movie are just like people being birthed out of there. Anyway, totally. This is where we're not talking about Alien.
So, I love this record. If anyone struggles getting sleep and doesn't know what to put on, this is the kind of record you could put on loop and just see if you like it. See if it works. For me personally, if I've had a day, I love putting on a nice little ambient record when I go to sleep, and this is one of my go-to records. It is so, so nice. It is literally a helpful album. It has helped people get sleep when they struggle with it, so good for him. Good for him. I love this record so much. One last artist here in the electronic, and we're almost done, mind you. Telemann Tel Aviv released Fahrenheit Fair Enough. There's a lot of wordplay there.
Huh.
It's an IDM duo from New Orleans. This is a really nice record. Again, it's another chill record. This whole month is full of really listenable chill music. So another one to just add to the stack if you got the time to listen to it. Roiksopp, great record. The Other People Place, Sleep Research Facility, Telemann Tel Aviv. Like, oh my gosh, these are all really, really solid records. You led off with this. Now we're in metal, and we only got a few more records. System of a Down releases Toxicity. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my god, I love this record. I think that this is one of those albums that elevates the new metal genre. I think it's the fact that it's not a bunch of, like, meathead lyrical content, that these guys care a lot about Armenia and have a lot of interesting, unique Eastern European elements to their music. Their singer's great, well-written songs. Chop Suey, Ariel's, Toxicity were all huge hits. This album sold 8 million copies. I absolutely love it. Go listen to Toxicity and just think about the drummer. Just think about what the drummer's doing. It is one of those, like, makes you want to air drum. Just listening to him with his drum fills is just heaven. It is such a good record. Really, really great. I just absolutely love this record. So Slayer, you guys know who Slayer is?
Heard of it, yeah.
Slayer is like the, in my opinion, the quintessential thrash metal band. It's not Metallica, it's not Megadeth. To me, it's Slayer. Slayer is from Southern California, so they actually take a lot of influence from the hardcore scene, and I think that it makes their sound kind of unique in that regard. They released this album, God Hates Us All. You know, hey, if anybody was going to release an album around fucking the September 11th attacks, that, you know, Slayer does capture the moment, you know. It's great. It's sort of a return to form for them, because the last album they had made was a bad, almost nu metal-ish record. And the one before that, I love Called Undisputed Attitude, but it's all covers of hardcore songs, so people didn't like that, because they don't realize that Slayer is essentially a thrash metal band making heavy metal. That's another point.
Yeah, Wes.
Yeah, how dare you?
I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking.
I think there's a whole thing about metalheads and hardcore kids, and it's sort of like, I think that the metalheads don't realize just how much Slayer is a hardcore band. Mm. Like, Slayer being the definitive thrash metal band, still, at the same time, they have roots in punk music, and I think that's what works for them so, so well. The riffs are huge, the drum beats are fucking in your face forever. And yeah, their singer, he just has this wonderful yell. He's just like, rah! You just gotta fucking go with it. Like, if you guys don't listen to Slayer, listen. They have this track called Disciple. Like, if you could get through 2 minutes of Disciple and you're not grooving with it, I would just say stop right there. Just that's it. That's all you needed. If you, like, any part of you enjoyed that, keep listening. Like, fucking Slayer, God Hates Us All. This track is a banger. This album's a banger. It's so fucking good. Okay, this is gonna be a lot of words to describe this band.
Oh, gosh.
But POD. Do you guys know who POD is?
Yep.
Yeah, this is a SoCal Chicano faith-based nu metal band.
Mm-hmm.
You got to cram all of that information in there to truly define what POD
stand for.
Oh, Gosh, I remember looking this up too.
I don't remember.
I'll look it up later. But yeah, they have this album called Satellite, which sold 7 million copies. This is a huge one. This is the best-selling Faith album of the year. It's a Faith. They are a Faith band, and this is a Faith record. Yeah. With tracks like Alive, Boom, Youth of a Nation. These were all really, really big hits for these guys.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, this album really holds up. I think the best thing about it is that, again, so many of these nu metal albums are just like super douchey, like bar fight kind of asshole bands. And like this album is just so like uplifting. Like it's so, I don't know, so positive and so community focused. All of the tracks are like, they're hyping themselves up, but they're hyping you up. I think that's the big thing, is they want you to feel good about yourself, which is so different than all the other assholes making fucking nu metal music, because they're all about being angsty and angry and wanting to fight people. And POD is like, your family is important, your faith in God is important, and you are important. So, like, boom. Like, I don't know. Like, that's what their fucking deal is. Oh, it means their name means playable on death. Which is like something you would be like in an obituary, or not obituary, but like, you know you're going to pass away, or that if something happens to you, then you have a tape that you prepare that said that is to be played for the people who care about the fact that you died. I don't know why they said that, I don't know why they did that, but that's what POD means.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, great, great record. I think this one's a really, really good one. Moving on, three more to go and we're out of here. Creator released an album called Violent Reaction. They are a German band. I believe they're from Germany. And they're like one of these OG like thrash metal bands. They were recording thrash metal records in the 80s, and their thing is that they were very like thick and kind of nasty with their thrash metal, verging on what would now be even death metal. Very crunchy stuff they were doing. I don't really like them that much. You know?
Yeah, I think, fuck those guys.
I think they have an album in the 80s called Pleasure to Kill. I remember loving that record a lot. And they have a song like Command of the Blade, if you like really shitty fantasy stuff in your thrash metal. It's good. And this album is definitely like that sound, that 80s sound, and it worked well for them then. It works well for them well enough now. But it is very much a pure play into thrash metal, even verging on death metal. And it's like kind of samey after a while. There's really not a lot of standout stuff there, but as a vibe, they're doing it. Entombed. Entombed is a Swedish death metal band, and they're like OG. They recorded albums in the 90s, like the early 90s, specifically Left Hand Path, Clandestine, Wolverine. Like, those are the like three fucking essential Swedish death metal records. If you're big, and it's very specific. But for what
was Wolverine about the X-Men?
No, no, sadly, it was not. I believe it's about being torn to death by the feral animal.
Hmm. That's embarrassing. They're quite small.
Just as well could be. Their album Gambit, though, is about Gambit.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Just this card-loving Cajun.
Yeah. Mon ami. Yeah, no, I won't say too much about this other than the fact that I personally love this band. And this is a really good record for them, too. Again, you know, it's a little past the point where they were, like, cutting edge with anything. They're just kind of making another Entombed record, so... in that regard, they're not breaking new grounds or doing anything really special. And if you have never listened to Entombed, I don't think you start here. I think you just go back and listen to their Golden Age stuff. But it's still fun. And last album to talk about is Shape of Despair, released Angels of Distress. This is a Finnish band. 5 tracks, 54 minutes.
Oh my god.
So this is a very niche subgenre called Funeral Doom.
Amazing.
Quick hit on that. So think about Black Sabbath. Think about Black Sabbath's like slower, sludgier moments. That's what would become doom metal. Mm. These guys make funeral doom. And so with doom metal in its intense is kind of supposed to be like scary and nasty and ominous. Funeral doom is actually like funeral dirges, you know, like those slow chanting things as you are carrying a corpse to its grave. Literally taking that component and mixing it in with doom metal. It sounds strange to describe. But it's how you end up with 5 tracks in 54 minutes.
Great for the kids.
It's so much different, though, because it's very somber and peaceful in its own way. It's very mournful and sad. It's not like it's angry or scary. It's just very melancholy in its own way. There's usually strings accompanying it. And, again, just this mammoth crushing wall of distortion. And again, it was the slowest tempos you've ever heard in what would be considered popular music. This is all popular music, by the way. Everything we talked about falls under the umbrella of popular music. Jay-Z and Shape of Despair make popular music. So that's a point of order. And I'll stop right there. I love this record. This is a great record. And not a lot of people really dig into Doom. And if you get into Doom, it's like, God, that's too much. You may actually find yourself, if you go just another layer deeper, finding yourself in the you know, soothing warm waters of what would be funeral Doom. So, wow, what a month for music. Really, really good.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah. If you made it, what a time to be alive.
Indeed. So you guys want to blast the movies real quick?
Let's go. I'm okay if you guys are. Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. Quick context in terms of visual media. Adult Swim premiered on Cartoon Network.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Do you have anything about the first episode or like the lineup?
No, I didn't find... Only looked at quick hits. I don't know what the lineup is. But Wes, if you want to do a quick fact check, if you feel like it, no obligation.
The original lineup of...
Of Adult Swim.
Also, probably gonna beat me to it. So.
I can give it a shot, yeah.
The first episode of the CBS series The Amazing Race premiered.
And I think it's Zach Galifianakis. Is that about white people?
I think that's the best thing we've ever gotten out of The Amazing Race, is that joke. oh, and you guys, second most tragic event of September 2001. Trebek shaved his stash.
Oh,
no.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Alex Trebek used to have a mustache, and in September 2001, shaved it off.
Hmm. Were people upset? Is that one of those things where it's like viewership dropped off because he did that?
I don't know.
Because that's what happened when What's-Her-Face cut her hair in that WB show. Like, there was this really popular show where the actress, like, gave herself more of a bob. She, like, cut all of her hair off, and everyone got real mad, and they stopped watching the show.
Oh, how strange.
Yeah.
How weird and shallow.
I don't know.
What, you don't remember what the show was?
I don't know. I'm going to look that up, too. Gosh, you got me in
like, well, we have so much to do.
I'm going to take a guess at a couple of the shows for Adult Swim.
Go.
It's probably got Aqua Teen Hunger Force, I think was there in the beginning. And I think the same with C-Lab 2021. Was that the name of it?
C-Lab, I don't think so, something. Yeah. Yeah, C-Lab.
So it's probably those. I can't really tell. Like, for a while, they even had, like, anime on. Adult Swim at some point in the early points of it. I don't know.
I feel like it would be if it were going to be anime, it would probably be something like Dragon Ball Z. I feel like they would have to be like,
yeah, like they had like Cowboy like, Bebop.
Cowboy Bebop would be a good one.
That Trigun, was one.
Maybe
Trigun would be one.
Yeah.
And they had some odd ones here and there. Like they kind of cycle through a few different things.
But the last sort of
I always felt like a rebel when I was a kid. I was like, oh, it's time for Adult Swim. Let's watch this. I'm a child.
The last sort of TV media thing that I have here for
Oh, it was Felicity. Felicity was the show. Where
she cut her hair and viewership dropped.
It did, yeah. Oh. People were kind of upset about that.
All right.
But whatever.
Last thing I have as far as like TV media is concerned, all of the fall premiere shows that would have happened in September were delayed into October because of September 11th. One thing that did premiere was The West Wing, where they had this really tasteless episode where most of the major cast was like stuck in a cafeteria with a bunch of high school aged children, and Aaron Sorkin got to be really didactic and explain exactly what was happening in the world to these children as if he was talking to the audience, because of course next to Aaron Sorkin we're all a bunch of children and he needs to teach us everything. Fuck that guy. Fuck that episode.
He is the king of straw man debate.
Mm.
He loves creating the pillar of virtue and then having them talk to get some, you know, reptile that
yep.
is just a hateful person, and they get to educate them on why they're so awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have watched an episode of The West Wing recently. It was about like a year, maybe 2 years ago. I went back and started watching. That show is so fucking quaint now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, I got it here.
Yeah. So, Adult Swim.
Actually, it was. You maybe know this one. Like, so apparently the first was all anime.
Wow.
It was Pilot Candidate, Gundam 83. Do you know that one?
Oh, that's a classic one. That one's really good.
Yeah. Outlaw Star and
Very great.
Tenchi Muyo. I remember watching Tenchi Muyo.
Yeah. I love Outlaw Star. That's one of my favorite
animes. Des must have watched a lot of that. Shells.
Oh, God. I just rewatched it recently. It was such a good one, yeah.
Nice.
Gundam 008 was a really fun one because it wasn't focusing on, like, Gundam Wing, where it's like the five, that they're mythical Gundam mobile suits or like all the traditional ones. It mostly focused on like a squad in like an army scenario. Oh, we got this mission. We got to go deal with these guys.
Dez just woke up, doesn't know why. He's like, somebody's talking shit about Gundam Wing.
But it followed like this little squad. There was like, they had like the truck with two guys that did like surveillance and tried to track stuff. And they had your other three that were in their own regular mass-produced mobile suits and everything like that. And it felt like, in terms of Gundam, it was like the one that felt more like an actual war, because you're seeing their like fears of possibly dying, and they're getting new mobile suits because they're getting their ass kicked. Like, it was just, you know, things like that. So there's this iconic episode where there's a goof mobile suit, which is this Azaku. It's a more advanced Zaku with a giant sword, where it takes out these gun tanks and they're supposed to defend them, where he stabs through it and oil splashes all over him. I mean, 00083 is kind of like one of those things where, like, if you're a Gundam fan, you know this anime and have warm feelings for it. Fond memories of it. It's a good one.
Yeah.
And Des must have watched a lot of Adult Swim, because I remember her talking about that that Tenchi show as well as Outlaw Star. She liked those.
Yeah, Tenchi Muyo, that's one of those animes where, like, the main character is surrounded by all women. They're all in love with him.
Oh, it's like a harem, I think.
Yeah, it's like a harem anime kind of thing. Except I did like it when I was a kid, because it had a couple of interesting
ladies.
That wasn't why. Like, he had like a magic sword that was like a lightsaber. Yeah, I see the eyebrows.
I bet he did.
There was like a weird rabbit squirrel thing that can turn into a spaceship. That was weird.
Yeah, remember to enjoy your rabbit.
Yeah, it was very weird. Sure,
enjoy your rabbit.
And like the last episode, he like gets this weird...
Hey, spoilers, yeah, motherfucker! Just
weird stuff going on with this anime. There's not much I remember about this anime. And like...
Please continue to recap it.
Yeah. Like the chick with the long blue hair is like an alien, but she's like sealed away in a shrine that he accidentally breaks the seal of.
On Earth.
On Earth.
Okay.
But he accidentally breaks the seal to the shrine that this alien sealed away in, and then she becomes one of the harem.
Let's just say that he's breaking a lot of seals.
It's a weird ass anime that like has so many weird spin-offs and shit with this thing.
Yeah, boy.
Probably some OVAs.
Probably.
It says here that shortly thereafter, you're right, Cowboy Bebop came around, Aqua Teen Hunger Force was their foray into comedy, or into like not anime, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Looks cool. Like later on, Harvey... Oh, I loved Harvey Birdman.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
The Brack Show. I used to love The Brack Show. Oh, my God, that show was fucking killer. C-Lap 2021, like you were saying. Yep.
I knew that was early.
A bunch of these already.
I knew that one was early. I couldn't remember when, though.
Did you guys watch The Brack Show, by any chance?
I can't place it.
Oh, my God, I loved it. So, they did this thing called Space Ghost Coast to Coast, which was...
Yeah, you remember that. About that one.
So, yeah, it was Space Ghost, which basically had a late-night show. Space Ghost was, again, one of these just... weirdo characters from like the 70s or whatever.
Like some like Hanna-Barbera shit or something like that.
Yeah, some cheap Hanna-Barbera content they had free reign to use however they wanted. So they made a night show, like a talk show, with him. And it's like he's got Zorak, who's just like in the drum kit. It's like supposed to be his music guy who's just hates him. And, it's so fun. And then Brack is like their on the scenes man, or just like their weather guy. They cut to him to do whatever bullshit. And it's clear that Brack is just like kind of a dullard, kind of an idiot, but a lovable goof. So then, like, later on, they make, like, a 1950s-style sitcom called The Brack Show, where he's, like, got this very spicy Latin father and this very nice mom that he looks just like. Like, the mom actually looks like she's part of whatever crazy masked race these guys are supposed to be, and the dad is just, like, supposed to be, like, was it Ricky Ricardo? And it's just, it is, like, this show is so weird. And Zorak, the drummer guy... is like his best friend, who like, okay. but like always picks on him and shit.
Oh yeah, that's right. The Brack was that weird cat looking guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly love this show. I don't know if it even holds up, but I just remember it being so goofy and zany. And Brack was just a puppy dog. He's so lovable throughout the whole thing. He's just such a goof, and you kind of like root for him, even if he's just such an idiot. Like,
I preferred Space Ghost Coast to Coast, but that was one of those shows where mm-hmm. I thought it was really funny for like 10 minutes, and then I got really bored of the show, and nobody just changed the channel.
They would do actual interviews. Like, I distinctly remember they interviewed Bjork back in the day. Of Vespertine fame. Like, they got Bjork out.
Shit. Movies?
Let's do it. Yeah, not a lot of movies to talk about, though.
No, not really.
I only got four listed.
No, but there's a really good one in there. I didn't think I would like it, but yeah. I really liked the movie.
Well, let's start with Amelie, then.
Yeah.
Oh. When you guys told me we were watching this, I was like, all right, let's watch this. And then, like, the day of, I couldn't quite remember what movie we were talking about, and I thought we were going to be watching the Amelia Earhart movie. I was like, I don't even know if that was released that year. It probably wasn't.
They didn't know they made an Amelia Earhart movie.
And I'm like, I have no interest in watching this. I'm sitting here planning on, like, oh, I can't make it tonight, guys. Well, I'm not feeling
you
great.
Were going to cancel.
I was totally going to cancel.
I'm not feeling
it. And then I realized that it was Amelie. I was like, ah, fuck it. Let's go. Let's watch this. And I'm so fucking happy I did. This movie was great.
It was a great movie.
Yeah. For what it's worth, the full title was like The Fabulous Life of Amelie Poulain. Mm. But we just call it Amelie because we don't want all those extra words.
Right. So it's, how would you describe it? It's sort of like this slice of life comedy.
Yeah, where slice of life Parisian film.
Where this young woman, who I would posit is probably on the spectrum,
she tries to manipulate the fates of the people around her.
Right. She has a couple of traumatic childhood experiences, and her way of interacting with the world then becomes like trying to set up these interactions, or try to set in course a series of events to get her desired result. And sometimes successfully, most of the time successfully, sometimes things don't go exactly the way she would like them to turn out.
Some examples being like what?
One of the early ones, you know, like as a child, she would manipulate a TV antenna of a neighbor who annoyed her, mm-hmm. so he would miss the important parts of a soccer game.
Yeah.
Or she like manipulates like a coworker of hers, as well as like a customer who's clearly stalking one of her other coworkers into like having a relationship with each other.
Yeah,
Like she does it with like good intentions. But I was like, you don't set up a stalker with somebody.
Not everything works out well for him. Yeah,
but the movie isn't like totally revolving around like these manipulations she's doing to other people. It's more
machinations, even.
Yeah, right. It's more about the. What is she? She finds a photo album that mm-hmm. some guy drops, and it kind of becomes like her inability to connect directly to him. So, you know, they keep on setting up these encounters in order to give it back. But then she always we'll do like this fucking scavenger hunt where she forces him to like walk a certain path in the city in order to get it back. But then just like chickens out and ends up not fulfilling the purpose of the meeting.
Yeah,
ever actually meeting him.
This movie is classified as like a romantic comedy, but like the romance is it's so weird when it's finally actually getting to it. Like it doesn't like seem like a romantic comedy.
And it goes back to her childhood trauma of like having like a very distant father and like witnessing the death of her mother. It's a very quirky death. Like this whole movie is so fucking kitschy and quirky.
Yeah, I feel like two words that constantly come up about this are kitschy and whimsy. I feel like there's so much whimsy, and it's whimsical. And
I actually did look up some comments that other film directors. Wes Anderson said about this
movie. Oh, of course he would say, oh, but this is my lifeblood. I inject this into my veins directly.
His direct quote was, all right, fucking settle down.
Really?
No, I made that up.
Okay. Because it's like after this, very shortly after this, he's going to have a movie come out. I kid you not, before the end of the year, he's got a movie coming out.
Is it Bottle Rocket?
He had already made Bottle Rocket.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very big movie for him, and one that sort of sets you up for what will be the Wes Anderson style, which essentially is the Jean-Pierre Jeunet style.
Is it Rushmore? Or is it Tenenbaums?
Royal Tenenbaums. Mm. Yeah, that's going to come out real soon. Yeah, I feel like it's also got a little bit of a Terry Gilliam like papercraft kind of vibe to it. You know how everything feels kind of cheap, but isn't in a way? It's like there's a magical kind of sense to it all, and yet it all feels so very made with those like safety scissors.
Yeah. And like the set design and just like the scenery throughout the entire movie, like everything is very busy.
It also is very much a snapshot of a very specific time in Paris, shot on 80 different locations in Paris. Mm. This is very much a love letter to the city, kind of in the same way that like someone like John Demme is famous for filming New York. Like all of his films, like New York is so much a part of his movies. Same way here for him, like Paris is as much a character as anybody is in this thing.
And what was I saying? Oh, like she witnessed this very quirky death of her mother, and like it hinders her from actually being able to connect to another person in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
So she has to go through these machinations in order to, like, this fucking, like, mousetrap of relationships.
Yeah.
She is homeschooled because her father thinks she has a heart condition because the one time a year he touches her is to check her health, yep, and her heart beats faster because she's being touched by another human. Yep. I mean, it's just so weird.
Yeah, oh, and there's a... It just makes me think of all the other funny relationships, how she's, like, taking pictures of the dad's garden gnome, in an effort to get him to leave the house and do stuff, you know? And it's like, what, she ends up kind of intervening with the produce shop kid who's being kind of bullied by his boss. And she very, like, Home Alone style rigs the shit in his house. Like, it's so funny.
It's really fun the way that she has, like, these elaborate, like, Rube Goldberg machine ways of manipulating people. I was just like,
who's the guy in Saw with the face, the whatever they...
Oh, Jigsaw.
Yeah, she's like Jigsaw, but in a romantic comedy.
she's a whimsical Jigsaw.
Yes. Oh, another director I feel like is very heavily inspired by this. Maybe not so much in the way that it's shot, but the way it's edited has got to be Edgar Wright.
Mm.
Edgar Wright loves this super snappy, dynamic. I feel like so many different shots I feel like I've seen in Edgar Wright movies. Like how there's just constant motion in the way that it's edited, even if it's for like a half second shot of her like getting onto a subway and then boom, that train car is moving down the street in a direction that leads you into the next scene. It's that visual movement like that you kind of get from Edgar Wright too. So like I feel like the fact that we've named every director we name in association with like this feels inspired. Like this would have inspired these directors. They're all really good directors. So, like, man, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
Really, what else? I feel like I'm not trying to wrap this up, but what else? I mean,
thoughts? There's so many like little things that they throw in here and there that don't actually contribute to the overall scope of the movie, but it's just fun. Like, she collects stones because she likes skipping rocks.
That's nice. That was one of the things. Like right at the start of the movie, everyone they introduce, they have to give like two or three general facts about their life, apropos of nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that beginning part where it's just that one narrator going on for like what felt like a half hour.
It is probably like, you're right, probably like 8-10 minutes.
Yeah, it took a minute. I'm seeing for I was getting worried because like I hope the whole movie is not this because I mean
it's been
so long.
I could have stood another 8-10 minutes of that. I'd be fine.
Yeah. What do you think of Audrey Tautou? The Amelie herself? I think she got a face. She's got like that kind of face that you just kind of get like sucked into. She's just so pretty.
Yeah, like, nice and then, like, and looks sort of like so precious. Like,
yeah.
You don't want to be doing harm to her. Be like kicking a puppy.
Yeah.
And I think it's not a coincidence that they tend to shoot her like at a downward angle, like the camera's like looking down because it makes the eyes look bigger.
She's got that saucer-eyed look about her. Mm. Apparently, Janae picked her as Amelie, having not even seen her act. But having seen her on the poster of Venus Beauty Institute, a movie I actually watched like way back in the day because I had just watched Amelie and I was like, oh my God, what else has this girl done? And it's like she's in this really kind of trashy trashy French comedy about women that work at a spa. Like, it's not a particularly good movie, but she's in it and it's cool.
That shows some confidence as a director. Like, I want to make a movie. I don't care if you can act or doing this.
Yeah, again, I don't know how much... I hope that's not entirely true, because that's kind of a shitty way to cast an actress for a main film. It's like, I mean, it's better than what like Michael Bay was doing with Megan Fox, like making her wash his car. But,
you know, oh, what a fucking creep. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, like that. But it's just funny that... Again, he saw her face on the poster and was like, oh, she got a face. Let's see that thing in motion. She could be, if she's a half-decent actress. Clearly, someone put her on the poster of another film, so they're taking a gamble. Like, oh my God.
But yeah,
yeah. I think it's a great movie, and it holds up. It really is great.
Yeah, totally.
Very, very good. For years, the second I saw the cover, I was like, oh, I've seen this picture of this movie, but I never knew anything about it. But this movie is really good.
Totally. I can remember seeing like the poster art, the cover art for this movie when I worked at Blockbuster.
Oh, God.
And now I feel old.
Ew.
Yeah. We'd have it on the shelf, and it was... I don't remember what section it was.
I remember seeing the poster of Amelie when I worked up. Like, God, it's painful.
Yep.
I feel bad for you.
Hey, shut the fuck up. I mean, at that point, by the time I was working there, the movie had been out for several years. I'm actually surprised, like, knowing what the movie is now, I'm surprised that we had it in stock. And you know what? good for us. Credit to us for having that movie.
You got fired at that place.
At a fucking Blockbuster. Oh. Hey, only because I was stealing.
I thought it was because you were telling.
We could laugh at it now.
I thought it was because you were charging people for not rewinding the DVDs.
That would have been amazing. People dropping off. Hey, did you rewind this? If I have one regret of working there, it's that I wasn't asking people to rewind their DVDs.
All right. What was the budget of this movie?
Oh shit! I don't know.
Foreign film.
In francs or euros?
I have it translated to U.S. dollars.
Okay.
I couldn't even...
Tell me in copies of Lufia.
I'm going to say $5 million.
I was going to say 15, which I think is way high.
Say it.
15.
Say it. If you add up both your numbers, divide it by two, you get to the exact number, which is 10 million.
Oh, that's
so between both of us. Exactly. We split did the point. It. Yay.
How much do you think it made?
Domestic box office, like U.S. or worldwide?
I believe this is worldwide.
$40 million.
I was going to go 50.
It is way more than that. $174 million.
Oh, very
wow,
good.
Wow, we suck.
Good for that.
This movie, why I'm assuming it's got to be international gross. I feel like it was popular here, but $147 million popular? Mm. I mean, I think like Hardball made like $40 million.
Spoilers.
I don't even have the Hardball on my list, so there it is.
Oh, we're not going to talk about it. I got a couple other ones. Do you have The Musketeer on your list?
I don't.
It's an action movie. We're moving on. Hardball, the Keanu Reeves one where he teaches inner city, and by that they meant black kids, how to play baseball.
Yeah.
Like a very Mighty Ducks premise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't want to speak an ill word about Keanu Reeves. I just don't know how well this would hold up. Like, don't worry, black children. Mr. White Guy is here to save you. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have any memory of this movie. I don't think I've ever seen it, and I really don't care to see it. Mm. Like, you know, Keanu Reeves has made much better movies, I'm sure, but there it is.
Yep.
They had to make something that year.
There's a thriller with, I think, like a Michael Douglas and Sean Bean and Brittany Murphy, Don't Say a Word.
Oh, yeah, I didn't.
I think this movie like made $100 million. I did not watch it. I was like, this movie made a lot of money. Maybe I'll watch this thing. And I started reading a plot synopsis, and it was just so fucking like convoluted and had all these plot elements. There was like a kidnapping, like a fucking murder mystery, and like a setup plot. After reading a few sentences, I was like, never mind. There's just too much happening. I don't give a shit.
So you know how people talk about Sean Bean is dying a lot in movies, how he's just constantly dying? You know what I find wild? The Silent Hill movie, not a bad movie. It's actually pretty good. As far as video game movies go, it's a great one. It's actually top tier. Sean Bean lives. He doesn't die. of all the movies he should die in.
But wasn't the premise of that movie like he was actually dead the whole time?
No, he shows up later.
Okay.
He shows up after and he's like, oh man, I think y'all dead. I'm pretty sure that's a direct quote.
What Hearts in Atlantis is on your list?
It is not. That is a Stephen King property, right?
Isn't that
part of not The Stand? What is that other book series he had? I want to say
Dark Tower.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. I'm gonna make sure.
Yeah, that's Dark Tower.
You got Zoolander. Zoolander's on your list, right?
It is, in fact.
Okay.
Oh yeah,
take us away. You guys know Zoolander, right?
Yeah. So Ben Stiller is back after the commercial failure of Cable Guy. Oh, yeah, no, fucking Hearts of Atlantis is a part of the Dark Tower series.
Shut the fuck up.
Seriously?
It is loosely adapted from Stephen King's Dark Tower, Low Men in Yellow Coats.
Victory.
Wow.
Called it. Nailed it. And I was totally serious.
I told you it was a Stephen King property, and then all you did was name a Stephen King. Lucky you didn't say the fucking language.
You're right. Stephen King, famous for not having that many properties.
Yeah, it wasn't it. Good job. No. Okay, right. We were talking about Zoolander, yeah. So Zoolander, it's directed by Ben Stiller. And prior to that, he had made The Cable Guy, which is like kind of wild that movie wasn't a success, because I don't know what your opinions of it. I fucking love Cable Guy.
I like it. I wouldn't say I love it.
And it was like Jim Carrey at the height of his popularity, too.
Yeah, I think people just kind of weren't ready for him to be making such a dark film. I don't know. This feels like, while it doesn't star... I can't think of the actor's name. Will Ferrell. It doesn't star Will Ferrell. He is in the movie, but it feels kind of like what Will Ferrell's like brand is going to be.
Mm.
Kind of creating these knowingly stupid but fun characters. This is all supposed to be a setup of like the fashion, high-end fashion industry, told through the eyes of like an idiot model portrayed by Ben Stiller and Derek Zoolander, kind of like seeing his glory days. Like maybe he was like the king of it all. That's kind of like starting to see some other people kind of creep up on him. Specifically, Owen Wilson's character portraying Hansel. And then there's this whole like nefarious plot being constructed by Will Ferrell, who was a big fashion designer.
Yeah, yeah, but like, he's like
he's trying to kill the president of Malaysia or something like that.
he's like some like construction project as a front for something. The Derek Zoolander's like Center for Children Can't Read.
No, that was
yeah.
Like he promises to build that for him or something like that. Mm. What is this? A school for ants? I mean, yeah.
He's like, these would be at least 10 times bigger. No, I mean, I didn't watch this to prep for this or anything. I never got around to it. But I remember loving this movie, and it's got a fantastic cast.
It's got a lot of great one-liners. I mean, it's a fun movie.
It's got Penelope Cruz.
Oh, my God, for real, she's in it? I didn't know that.
Is she? I don't know.
Oh, Christine Taylor is in it. Christine Taylor will later become Christine Taylor Stiller. She will marry Ben Stiller.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mila Jovovich is in it. She's got a fun little role in this, playing like that Eastern European assassin, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she is herself a model, so like this is absolutely her wheelhouse, as like literally a thing she does.
Also,
Jerry Stiller's
is in the Resident Evil movies.
Yeah, she's done a film or two in her day. That is true. She was in Blue Lagoon 2, or Return to Blue Lagoon. Also, Dave Duchovny is in it. John Voight, Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn and John Voight is dad and brother.
That's respectively, right.
And they work at the coal mine. He's like, I got the black lung pop.
My man.
Oh my God. Wetness is the essence of water or whatever.
Wetness is the essence.
Also, future 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump.
Oh, he's in this?
He's in, yeah.
No way.
I did not know that.
A small little like part where he's like maybe on a red carpet or something. Like, oh, there's Donald Trump or something.
Doesn't David Bowie shows up?
Yeah, David Bowie is part of it as well.
He's the judge between Hansel and Zoolander.
Yeah, and they use the song West Dance.
Disqualified!
Judah Freelander is in it. He plays the other brother next to Vince Vaughn. Alexander Skarsgård is one of the, I think he dies, he's one of the guys in the freak accident, the gasoline fight.
The freak gasoline fight accident.
Yeah, Jennifer Coolidge is in it. She's fantastic. And it says Patton Oswalt plays monkey photographer. I don't remember that, but
Who's the guy with the hand photographer? The guy from X-Files?
Yeah,
Duchovny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was such a fun line, too, when he goes through this whole plot, and then Ben Stiller responds with, but why models? And that was... That wasn't written that way. Ben Stiller wasn't paying attention. They forgot his line, and they went with it.
I didn't even read the cameo list, which consists of people like Lance Bass, Victoria Beckham, Stephen Dorff, Fred Durst, Fabio, Tom Ford, Cuba Gooding Jr., oh my God, Tommy Hilfiger, Paris Hilton, Heidi Klum, Lenny Kravitz, Lil' Kim, James Marsden is in there, Natalie Portman, oh my God, Gavin Rosdale, Mark Ronson, producer Mark Ronson, Winona Ryder, Gary Shandling, Christian Slater, Gwen Stefani, you're right, Don and Melania, former First Lady, who fucking hates Christmas. Melania Trump. Who gives a fuck about Christmas, Melania Trump?
That's her full legal name.
Versace, yeah, oh my God, this fucking movie. Oh, yeah, so it happened.
Come on.
Sure, I kind of wish I had gone back and watched this.
I mean, come on, the files are in the computer, guys.
They're in the computer?
They're in the computer.
They're slapping it. Not every joke works, but man, when it lands.
That has the one with the tiny cell phone, too, when he pulls out the itty bitty cell phone and puts it through his ears.
Was that an SNL bit as well?
I don't know.
Might have been.
This movie was a gem.
Wake me up before you go, go. God damn, this movie had so many moments. But yeah, so, about that, you know?
Hey, yeah.
What was budget?
Oh, God.
20 million.
With all those cameos and stuff?
You don't usually pay people for cameos.
I know, I'm joking. But
you're right. Did Matt Damon have a cameo? He has a cameo in everything.
Yeah.
I mean, they got Trump. I don't know. 50. 50 million.
50. It was 28.
All right.
What did he get made?
Oh. 150.
I want to go lower. 100 million.
You guys are both way off. 61 million. Again, post... Wow. Post 9/11, rough time to be.
Oh, okay.
I believe this came out in late September, so like 2 weeks after. But yeah, you know, it did all right. It certainly lived on. Like, it is a well regarded. Oh, did you know that fucking God, what's his name? Ebert. What? Ebert gave it 1 out of 4 stars.
But it had Blue Steel in it.
Well, that guy can't feel joy.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently, Ben Stiller said that later on he had a private conversation with the man and he sort of regretted giving him that. It was sort of like a reaction. He gave a lot of bad reviews post 9/11.
Mm. According to Ben Stiller.
Yeah, and, you know, Ebert's dead, so, you know, yeah. He also said that
Ben Stiller killed him after that day review.
Well, let's finish the sentiment. Ebert is dead and in hell.
Do we know that, though?
God!
All right.
Where were we?
God. He's like, well, if he's here, who's running hell? Okay. Glitter came out.
The Mariah Carey.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So Glitter kind of has a weird reputation. It's regarded as one of the worst movies ever made. You guys don't know shit about it, so I'll tell you it cost $22 to make, and it had a box office of only $5
million. I mean, I think it's a bit unfair, I think, to like... call something that you recognize as like the worst movie ever. The worst movie ever made is probably something that no one's ever heard of.
I saw a few clips from it, and it's not. The clips I saw looked totally average. Mm. It was a very average-looking movie. I think that this would be on par with Coyote Ugly. So unless someone thinks Coyote Ugly is the worst movie ever made, that's kind of what this movie is.
There are probably worse movies than Birdemic out there.
Yeah. Also,
take that back, sir.
The Birdemic is terrible, and I love it.
There is some real life. Obviously, there's the real life drama of it. Like, literally, if you go to the Wikipedia page, it's sad to see it, but they talk about why this failed. Mm. And it is literally a shot of a promo poster of it with the towers crumbling behind it.
Oh, boy.
Like, the towers are on fire, and then there's this poster of, like, Glitter in theaters this weekend. Mm. So, that's hard. It's hard to make that a successful film.
Yeah, didn't show a whole lot of tact.
I had a coworker recently tell me that he hated Moonfall. I was like, well, you completely missed the point of that movie. Like, it was supposed to be bad.
You weren't supposed to like it.
You weren't supposed to like it, but you were kind of. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's not a good movie. Hello, son, who has shown remarkable amounts of irresponsibility. Oh my God.
God. So, Mariah Carey in real life is going through shit too, mind you. She's been stretched very thin after tours, recording an album before this, acting in a movie when she's really not known as being an actress. She is also, during this, diagnosed as bipolar.
Eminem has been real mean to her.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we don't know that whole backstory. Mm. So, Eminem's nice to so many people, though. Him and Jay-Z are nice.
Famously congenial Eminem.
So, who knows? Who knows what's going on there? But, yeah, I all of it just makes me feel kind of bad for Mariah Carey that, you know, she gets shit on for this film. And I think she's kind of lately owned it. I feel like she's it's sort of been empowered in a way where she's, like, appreciating kind of the fun camp of making a very average film. And kind of like in the way that people would think of, like, Showgirls is a bad movie, but there's a kind of grandeur to how bad it is. Mm. So it's sort of like that with Glitter, where it's like, yeah, this is a cheesy, silly movie. But Mariah Carey, like... especially the clips I saw, she's singing in it. She sounds fantastic. Like, Mariah Carey is one of the best singers of her era. Like, so if you want to just listen to some pop music, it's got a lot of pop music in it. She sounds great. So there are redeeming elements to it, even if it is a boilerplate and by the numbers, like, I don't know, ascension of a pop star. Again, this is the boilerplate plot to Coyote Ugly. Mm. Except instead of, like, it's a girl who can sing, slinging drinks at a bar, it's sort of like this background or like backup singer who is clearly better singer than the main girl. So I don't know. It is what it is.
Cool. Last one. Take us home.
Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever see this?
No.
No, but the way that you describe it, I do want to watch it. It's kind of those things I keep forgetting to.
Next movie night?
We could totally watch it for movie night. I think this is like one of those slabs of old school anime that just like holds up so fucking well. One of the best animated movies you will ever see. Bar none, don't care. It is fucking gorgeous. You know the whole idea that every frame is a painting? This one literally is. Everything is fucking beautiful in this. Like, think of the best animation you've ever seen from Disney or from Studio Ghibli. This thing delivers. It is gorgeous.
Atlantis, The Lost Kingdom.
Yeah. Right.
There's beautiful cell shape.
El Dorado.
No. DreamWorks. It's DreamWorks.
Still.
And it's the first thing that popped my head. It's telling this, like, totally, like, hard-boiled anime fan, the kind of plot you just love to hear about, where it's like, okay, basically your Dracula villain has run away with this girl, and then they're bringing in, you know, the fucking man with no name, D, and they're going to pay him some money to go rescue her, right? And it's like, there's this other crew of, like, super cool badass vampire hunters. All of them have their own unique thing that makes them cool. One's got a big mallet. Like, one guy has, like, these spinny blades, and one of them shoots a bunch of arrows, and the other... Oh, and, like, that's another fucking interesting component. This feels like it's a Western, but it's also got a lot of modern tech in it, so there's also, like, a girl with, like, this fucking sick pistol. It looks like the caster gun from Outlaw Star. Oh. And she's riding around on Akira's bike, basically. You know, while they're trying to hunt down this, like, horse-drawn carriage holding a vampire and its woman hostage. She's not even holding her hostage. It's the whole thing.
See, that just... Right there, I'm sold. That's just fucking awesome.
The villains are badass. There's, like, this rogues gallery of dickheads they gotta fight their way through, and it's, like, this one evil dude that only lives in shadows, and he, like, pops out of the shadows to attack you, and there's the woman that, like, is, like, part of plants, so she, like, shifts in and out of plants and does all kinds of nasty things with that. And then there's this guy who's, like, this werewolf, except he's not really a werewolf, it's just his stomach is a giant mouth that eats people.
Okay.
Like, it's...
That was gonna be something weird. It's like, he's a werewolf, but only on the left side. Like, it's...
He's a werewolf, but it's not a wolf, it's a clam. He's a were-clam.
Yeah. That would be sick. No, he's like, it's like a wolf, except he's just got, like, you know, the flabby stomach of a man.
Okay.
No. Oh, it's a man-wolf.
A were-man.
It's a wolf that turns into a man on the moon. First moon.
Think kind of like Alien. You remember the guys from Alien Resurrection? How they're all kind of quirky and cool in their own unique way? Same way with this. And you go
Ron Perlman and guy who was a Reaver from X-Men.
Right. So, yeah, it's just... All of them are uniquely cool and badass, and they feel like they could be in their own movie if they wanted. But, no, they're just kind of backup characters for D to go around and fuck shit up. Like, it's super psychedelic, very psychedelic. Some of these sequences just sort of, it's like, it's supposed to be a fantasy thing, but everything I want to reference about it is science fiction. Like, there's this part with, like, Dune. It's like fucking Dune. He has to cross this highway, and it's made of sand, and then there's these giant, they're not worms, they're fucking manta rays, these obscenely large manta rays, and he's got to, like, jump through them and shit. And it's just so cool. It's just so cool. And, like, it's very much like Alien at times, where they're going into this like, gruesome-looking, like, Giger-esque living organism, where all these other, again, like, just freeze any frame in this, and it's so loaded with just information and art. It's so pretty. It's so cool. There's one that looks like it's a Grecian garden, and it's just so idyllic and beautiful.
The first 30 minutes.
Yeah. Like, literally 20 minutes into it, I bet, is when you hit that crazy scene with the fucking manta rays that swim in sand. Like, it is trippy as fuck. And the last bit is almost like 2000... You remember the end of 2001? Have you guys seen 2001 Space Odyssey?
No. Yep.
Like, do you remember that part at the end where he, like, sees himself age and it's in this weird room where everything's kind of ornate and beautiful, but he's trapped there. It's like a prison.
Yeah, but also very sterile.
Yeah.
And he keeps on seeing himself get older, and then he becomes the older version, and then there's this little, like, kaleidoscope of colors, and he's a baby.
Yeah.
Or a fetus.
Yeah, and then D comes in.
Oh,
No, and of course you get this big showdown at the end, and the whole premise is like very much like the this poor woman who was just like this nice, sweet girl, fell for the wrong guy who was going to take advantage of her and sure enough did. And that's kind of the point at the end of it is like, you know, the bad vampire gets his comeuppance, but of course they don't save the girl. And that's his parting shot to D is like, hey, one day you're going to be me. One day you're going to be me and someone's going to be hunting you. Because the whole thing about D is that he is a vampire, but he suppresses the urge to drink other people's blood. So sort of him saying like, yeah, one of these days it's going to get you too. No one lives forever. You'll die. So really, really nice way to kind of cap that series off. Again, if you care at all about what good animation looks like in an animated film, oh my god, this is the thing. You gotta see this
movie. Is this a series as well?
It's all kinds of stuff. It's a manga. There is a series about it. This is one of many movies they've made. I know I've only seen the original one from like the mid-80s. They made a Vampire Hunter D movie, which, as I recall, did not have any of this modern tech or like psychedelic shit. It was very much like old school, like European Dracula narrative. And this one is just sort of like, yeah, they don't care. They don't care. They're like, is it going to look cool? Is it going to look like a 2-page splash on your, like, a good comic book? Do it. You know, like, yeah, this movie fucking rips, guys.
All right, next movie night.
High Def. You can, by the way, you can watch this on YouTube right now. It is someone just put it up on YouTube. There's no ads for whatever reason, probably because it's demonetized. But the whole thing is there. It's 1 hour 40 minutes, and it's crisp as fuck. Definitely recommend watching it. Good stuff.
Cool. Next up is going to be the official show.
Yeah.
Well, some new games, some new game announcements to talk about, and then we'll start it all up again in October with the Pokemon show.
Yeah.
Anything big happening in the world of Pokemans?
No. No. As I'm saying it, though, I think there might be a new trailer or something coming soon. I'll have to do some looking around. But, you know, if we don't have anything new to talk about, then we'll play another quiz game or something.
We'll figure something out. Yeah.
And we'll... if there's nothing, then I'll make a quiz game and returning champion Wes can defend his title.
Oh, gosh.
All right, that's it. That's the end.
So it's all home.
See ya.